there, welcome to Board Game Hot Takes. My name is Tim.
This is Chris.
This is Adam.
And today we're going to be looking forward to the top five games we want to play in 2024. I think this is our third annual time doing this list. We kind of look at it in December every year, look at what we're excited about, whether it's new games, whether it's older games. And so we're going to be going through that. Before we jump into next year's list, though, we're going to look back at how we did last year. We're going to look at the top five games we wanted to play in 2023. See if we got them played. These are always interesting lists because I think what you'll find is that a lot of the games that we had mentioned on last year's list are games that we ended up featuring on the show or at least talking about on the show. So it's a good preview for what you might see next year when we look at our 2024 list. But let's just jump right in. So last year, our top five games that we wanted to play in 2023, Adam started out, his number five was Paperback Adventures.
I got this one largely because of your recommendation, Tim. And it just didn't hit for me. I couldn't get past the setup. I was a little confused. The components were all wacky. I talked about it on one of the episodes. So I bought it. I bought all the primary box and the three sort of different stories, the three different adventures that you can go on or the guys that you can fight against. And I love the puns. I love the titles of each one of them. They're super clever. And I'm sure I would have enjoyed the game had I gotten past the setup and the, it didn't grab me from the get-go, right? So it's like reading a book, going back to the book analogy. First couple of pages were just snoozers. That was it. I packed it up. I ain't got time for that. I packed it up, sold it, and went quickly. People do want to play this one. That's how Paperback Adventures ended for me.
Yeah, we did talk about this recently. I think you missed out. I've been doing this lately where I'm just not playing as many solo games as I used to. So I get all excited about a great solo game. And it's a great game, but you know, if you're not going to sit down and play it, then sometimes it's not worth it.
That was the other thing, too. I'm like, do I have time to sit around and play solo games? No, I don't. So even if I couldn't figure it out right away and enjoy it tons right off the bat, then I know I'm not going to sit around and play a game for an hour at a time. Yeah. So that's also part of a worked against it.
Yeah. Well, those of you listening, if you are solo players or you want to try a solo game, this is a fantastic game. So it's a shame you missed out on it. But sometimes for me, it's like sometimes it's just about opening the box, getting to explore the components, getting into the rules a little bit, enough to where I at least know what the game is. And then I can decide, you know what, this isn't for me. So
sure.
At least you got that experience out of it. My number five last year was Welcome to the Moon. This is the sequel to Welcome 2, which is a roll and write or flip and write game. We've talked about Welcome 2 a decent amount, and I have talked about Welcome to the Moon because I did get it played this year. I picked this up, a few months back, my wife and I played through it. It's kind of got a campaign mode, but it's not really a campaign. You can kind of just play any one of these individual. There's like 12 different maps you can play in this game, and it works a lot like the original Welcome 2, and it's wonderful. I love it. It replaced Welcome 2 for me. We only played like five of them just because the last one we played, my wife got really annoyed with, and so I haven't been like wanting to explore more, but I would go back to some of the earlier maps with her easily, and I'm still excited to explore more of it in here. Welcome to the Moon, fantastic flip and write, almost party level game. You can play with like eight people. Super fun, tons of stuff in this box. Well, Chris, his number five was Twilight Imperium 4th Edition. Chris, I haven't heard any mention of this game. Did you get this one knocked out this year?
Yeah, you know, I just never managed to get this one played. Can you imagine that? How could I not get TI4 played?
Were you even trying this?
Are you even a board gamer, Chris? Come on.
No, it's like, who am I going to play it with? You guys? I guess Adam wants to play it. Yeah, Adam does want to play it. Tim, you've made no qualms about your complete disenchantment. And my other game group, my in-person game group, just really isn't the kind to want to play an epic combat game like this. So the chances that I'm actually going to get this one played are really slim, but I still want to. It still seems like it would be a really interesting experience.
If one of you suckers picks this game up and bring it to our next BGHT con, I'll play it with you. You pick it.
Just set aside a day.
I mean, I don't know why you'd waste a whole day on that and when we could be playing five other games, but
Tim really just sold it, didn't he?
All right. Adam's number four last year was Forbidden Stars.
Nope. Haven't come close to playing this one. I don't know anybody that owns it or anywhere to find this game besides for paying ridiculous prices on the internet. The good side of this is that the designer's talking about re-implementing it with some other theme because the theme is, I think it's Warhammer 40K. So there might be a new edition of this coming out at some point in the future, but I've heard so many good things. I still really want to play this one, but haven't gotten it played.
Well, my number four last year was Scout. And I played this game a ton this year. We've talked about it several times on the show, but I actually just played it. It's kind of a regular, like, end of the night, a local group that I've been playing with that's taken with these, you know, Japanese trick taker trend where we're just playing random, crazy, hard to find little trick takers every week. But Scout still manages to make it in there once in a while because everybody loves it. So yes, played a ton of Scout this year. If you want a small box card game, this is the best one, I think, that's on the market right now. In fact, I think this made my top 40 list this year.
Wow.
Chris, your number four was Mariposa, Elizabeth Hargrave design. Did you get a chance to play this one?
No, I didn't. And this is one that I do regret not having played. And honestly, seeing it on the list from last year was kind of a reminder that I do want to play this one and I still want to play it. And I think that's one that that would probably make a good review episode for us if you guys are still interested. It sounded like everybody was last time. I would still love to get this one played, maybe even do a review.
Well, I've played this one since last year because if you remember right, we had our friend Jen on the show last year when we did this, and this mm-hmm. was one of her top five games that she wanted to get played as well. And so we played it right away, and it's great. I really liked it. It actually was surprisingly interesting. So I would love to go back to it.
Great.
Adam, you wanted to get Imperial 2030 in this year. How did that go? That was your number three.
Yeah, it didn't go well. I haven't played this one either. This was another one I was going to put on the list for this year. And I was like, wait a minute. I think that was on my list last year. I never got it played. So I got to come up with something else. Another game that looks fantastic to me. I'd love to try it. So I think it's relatively quick and it's like an area control game, but you don't actually control the armies. You're kind of the funders of the armies, the hand that pits the world against itself for your own profit. But it's a cynical kind of a game, but sounds interesting to me.
The concept of that type of game always seems interesting. I've played a few that kind of did that, and I always feel like I don't have any control, but I want to try this one too. I think it sounds interesting.
Yeah.
But Adam, based on this, your results so far, I'm going to take a wild guess that you're not someone that sticks to your New Year's resolutions either, right? I mean, how did you do on those this year?
I don't make New Year's resolutions, Tim.
That's probably good.
Yeah. I don't want to fail that many times in a year. I can only handle so much failure. So no resolutions for me.
Adam's like, I don't answer to anybody, even myself.
That's right.
Well, my number three was Taiwan Suyu, the Incan Empire. This was a design that I had just been really excited about, given a try to. It was a David Turtsey design. I bought it. And I learned it. It didn't get me excited enough to actually put it on the table with anyone. So I sold it. I played half a solo game and it's decent. It's like Anachrony with a less interesting theme where there's like a lot of decisions to make. I would try it if somebody put it on the table and wanted to play with me, but I'm not interested in, you know, really getting this one out anymore. And then Chris, you wanted to play Anunnaki, Dawn of the Gods. And I think this was your number three. And I think this has recently been available. I've been seeing this pop up on some review lists and things like that. I assume you didn't get this one played.
No, and I was surprised to see recently that this thing popped up on the hotness near the top of the list. Mm-hmm. The reason I didn't get it played was because it wasn't available. It was a Kickstarter, and it just recently, I'm not sure if it's available yet, but I know that they've been putting out some updates on the shipping. So apparently there was some shipping issues, so it's not entirely clear to me that it's actually gone out yet, but it's close to going out if it's not going out already. I still want to play this one desperately. I mean, this is like an area control game with multiple different versions of mythology by some of my favorite designers. I mean, this is like the great. It's like a dream come true kind of game. So I'm hoping this one actually becomes available soon. And if it does, that's another one that I might be asking you guys to do a review episode with me on.
I think some of our listeners or on the Facebook group or Blue Sky have posted pictures of this one. They've received their copy, so I think it's in the middle of delivery. Be interested to see or hear how their plays went and if they're enjoying it.
Yeah, I'd like to try it. One of the comparisons I heard about it was that it is very close to Scythe in the fact that it's like, it is a dudes on a map game, but it's also a Euro game, and mm-hmm. it's, to some extent, you may not be doing that much combat in the game.
Yeah,
which I'm totally on board with. I think that sounds really fun, a cool engine builder with an interesting theme to it. So yeah, maybe this is one we'll get a chance to review this year.
Yeah,
Adam, success. Your number two last year was Battle for Rokugan.
Oh my gosh, it took a small miracle to get this one played. Brought it up to Portland, and no. Was it Portland? I think it was Portland. It was somewhere.
Yeah,
it was.
Yeah,
it
was. And we got on the table, and it seemed like a relative success. For me, it was a success. I had tons of fun playing this one. I think Tim was having tons of fun playing this one. I think Chris and Steve also enjoyed it, but I'm glad we finally get this one played. It's been sitting here, a little tiny box of awesomeness, Battle for Rokugan.
Yeah, that's one you've been talking around. You've been talking about that one for a long time, and it just kind of kept coming to cons over and over again and never getting played. And then we finally got it out, and everybody loved it. It was a score.
It was, and I had such low expectations for this game because I really never heard it talked about. And it's like Adam kept, you know, talking about how he wanted to play it, but I didn't know anything about it. I was like, there's no way this game is good, and it was awesome. It was so much fun. In fact, I'm still watching for a copy. I chatted with a couple people in a local group that have a copy, and they're like, we've never played it, but not sure if we want to sell it yet. I'm like, come on, I want that game. But yeah, great game. My number two was Revive last year. It was, I think, just coming out in North America, but I just seen some cool pictures of it. It sounded like an interesting mechanism. So, well, we reviewed it, I think, this summer, and I bought it right after. I really liked it, and I've probably played it 8 or 9 times at this point, and it's been a huge hit with every group I played it with. Super fun. My last play was with 4 players, and it did go a little long. It's just, there's a decent amount of, you know, turns can take a little while. So I think 3 players is my favorite. 2 players is even solid. I played it at 2 as well. So 4 goes a little slow, but it's a great game. Still love it. Still, you know, yeah. So happy that I got a chance to give this one a try.
There's an expansion out for this one. Have you tried that yet?
No, I haven't. I don't even know if it's in North America yet. I saw some previews of it and stuff. I think it came out at Essen this year. I'm not sure that I am going to pick it up because the game has a ton of variability as it is, and I don't think it really needs more. Like, I haven't even had a chance to play all the advanced sides of all the different, you know, there's like 6 or 8 player mats in the base game, and they all play drastically different. And there's a whole bunch of other, you know, variability in it. So the expansion adds like a whole sideboard with a different card type and a different scoring track. And it could be interesting. At some point, I'm sure I'll probably pick it up if this game keeps getting played. But so far, I'm really loving it. It's been a big hit for me. Chris, your number 2 was Chaos in the Old World by Eric Lang.
And we got it played. In fact, we did an episode on it. And I have to admit, it was a little bit of a letdown. And the reason I'm saying that is because, not that it wasn't a good game, but I had heard a bunch of comments about, you know, this was Eric Lang at the height of his powers, and so much that, you know, was done in this game was copied by others, and all of that. You know, that may be true, that this was a groundbreaking game. But the reality is, I feel like he really hit the height of his powers, and maybe he still hasn't gotten there yet, but at least in terms of the combat and area control games that I've played, his trilogy of Ankh, Blood Rage, and Rising Sun are just so absolutely superior in so many ways to this game. I'm glad I played it for historical purposes, but I definitely think it was rounding out the catalog of one of my favorite designers more so than finding a new game that I want to play over and over again.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you, Chris. I really like Chaos in the Old World. I think it does some really cool and interesting things, and I'd be happy to play it anytime, but I think I'd always pick Blood Rage or Rising Sun over it. So, you know, but it was fun to play, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, same, you guys. If this is one that was readily available, when you went back to it many times, I'm sure we'd pick up a lot more nuance and learn a lot more cool things about it. But the fact that is other trilogies out there and we play those more often and they're much more available, and we have tons of fun playing all those. So like you, Chris, I'm glad to play it for historical purposes and see the progression of Eric Lang, but I'm not sad that it's not super available.
All right, well, getting to our number ones of last year, Adam, your number one was a game called Pessoa, which I had not heard about before. Did you get a chance to give this one a try this year?
No, I keep looking for it whenever I go to a little board game store or look for it online. I haven't found this one or played it yet. It looks fantastic. I still really want to play this one. The theme is kind of crazy. It's about a famous Portuguese author or poet, I believe, and this guy had all these kind of split personalities. And you're playing as his different personalities in a strange, intriguing kind of a game. So I'm still on the lookout for this one. That's Pessoa.
My number one last year was Stefan Feld's Marrakesh. And I have talked about it in the show. I've played this game a couple times now, and it is awesome. It's one of my favorite Stefan Felds, maybe my favorite of all time. It's a game that I loved so much that I plan to pick it up next time I see it at a store. It's a wonderful, wonderful Euro game, and fantastic. So really glad I got a chance to play it. hope to pick it up and play with you guys at our next BGHT Con, because I think this is one that everyone in our group will probably dig.
And it looked like, from what I saw, a pretty amazing table presence, which I'm always attracted to.
Well, it's interesting because there's like the Kickstarter or deluxe edition of this game, which is what I've played both times, and it's huge and, you know, beautiful, and we'll say beautiful roughly. I mean, like, it's not an amazing artwork or anything like that, but it's a big table presence and colorful. But they released an essential edition of it, which is just a less expensive, like, normal size box version of it. And I'm kind of tempted to pick up the normal size box version of it just because I think it will work just fine that way. So you may not get a chance to play the big, huge version that you've seen pictures of, Chris. I don't know. We'll see. I haven't decided yet. Maybe the first one I see in a store is the one that I'll pick up. Well, Chris, your number one last year was My Father's Work. And I would have bet that you were not going to get this one played by the time we recorded this episode. Did you get it done?
Yes, as you know, because you were there, we played it. Actually, all of us played it except for Adam. Unfortunately, that was when we had our Portland Con and we played My Father's Work. Adam had to leave early, so he missed out on this one. And from the discussion we had, maybe not the worst thing that he didn't play this one, because it would have been a big chunk of time doing something he might not have enjoyed. But I'm glad I got this one done. This is a game that I was so attracted to that I actually went out and bought a copy of it with no real proposition that I was going to play it other than maybe once a year with you guys. But I did it, and I'm really glad that I did. It was a very fun experience. It's one that I could see playing again maybe at the next con, you know, if we don't mind setting aside a little bit of extra time for it. I think the app adds a really nice element. The storytelling is one of the best storytelling games that I've played. And it was super fun, great thematic experience. I'm always going to try to get my number one played. In this one, I made it happen. Nice. Good for me.
Yeah, that's cool. I'm totally in on this. And I think we just got to get Adam half a bottle of whiskey and he'll dig it too. He'll have a good time with it.
Yeah, I think I'll have fun with this one. It looks cool and we'll get down with the story and have some fun with that. Love to play My Father's Work.
All right, well, let's jump into our top five games that we want to get played in 2024. For me, this was an interesting list because it's not a whole lot of new stuff. To be honest, I'm not watching what's coming up that much. I'm just like, I'm kind of waiting to see what strikes my fancy, what seems to be sticking around and people are playing. And I've got a list of some oldies and goodies, a couple newer things as well. How about you guys? How is this list for you? Anything that stood out to you this year?
Honestly, for me, not a lot of stuff jumped out in a big way. Some things did, and we'll get to that in the list. But what I found myself doing was trying to fill gaps in my board game knowledge. There's a designer that is highly regarded, and I haven't played a lot of their games. And so I'll play one of those games, pick one that's good. There's a type of game that maybe I haven't exposed myself to as much. I ought to find a good example of that type and play the game. So really, to me, this year, I approached it from the perspective of doing things that are a little bit different, expanding my horizons, and not just jumping back into the same old things that I already know that I like.
That's awesome, Chris. I love that. I think that's a great way to approach at this point. We've played so many games that it's fun to just try to fill those gaps.
I have a little bit different take than Chris, but not much of a different take. I'm looking for unique games that offer something different perspective or a different mechanism or something out there. We talked about it a little bit on one of the previous episodes, but I'm kind of narrowing my scope or looking for unique things out there. So I hope my list reflects that. I think it does a little bit. What about you, Tim?
It's a mix of things. It's like some old, some new, but it's just things that have been kind of sticking in my head, like things I've heard about. And at some point I was like, man, I really want to give that one a try. So anyway, it'll be fun to explore this list this year. I think I got a good opportunity to do it. I'm going to start it off here. My number five is a game that I've actually been really fascinated by ever since I heard about it. I think this game was released in like 2016. It's a game called Millennium Blades. And this was designed by D. Brad Talton Jr. and published by Level 99 Games. Now, what has me so intrigued about this game is that this is supposed to be essentially a recreation of kind of the hobby of trading card games. The way it works is there's like a real-time phase where you're opening up packs of cards and then trying to trade with other people in real time for the types of cards you need for a perfect deck. Think of like Magic the Gathering, or, you know, if you're a Pokemon player, you're a Disney Lorcana player. But I was a Magic the Gathering player for like 20 years, and I love everything about the opening that new pack and smelling those cards, that new cardboard, the excitement of going through the commons at the front of the pack, and then you get to that, ooh, there's a couple of good uncommons. What's the rare? Oh, it's some crappy rare I'll never play with. Or it's the shiny foil, like ultra rare version of an awesome card that I can't wait to play with. it's just like this, these great little hits of dopamine as you're going through those packs. And I think that this game is going to reproduce that. It's going to recreate it. This almost made my list the last couple of years because it's really been on my mind. But to be honest, I didn't think I was ever going to get this played. Like, who cares about trading card games? Who's going to have that passion that I do? Well, it turns out one of my local friends, Dano, who I talked about on our BGG Con episode, he owns this game. He knows how to play it. He's played it and he's committed to me that we're going to get it played. So I'm pretty confident I'll be able to say that I have this one played over the next year, and I'm super excited about it. Millennium Blades, where you are real-time trading cards and trying to get the perfect deck together, and then there's a little tiny combat phase that kind of runs through the deck you put together. I think it's almost like a war type of thing. I think this game is going to be a blast to play.
Tim, that sounds cool. I've heard about this one too. I can't wait to hear you talk about this one after you play it. Hopefully it lives up to your expectations. I know that feeling too. I used to collect all kinds of baseball cards and hockey cards and whatever sports cards back in the day. So the same thing, you open up a deck of cards or a little pack of cards and you have the old, you just have to stick a gum and then like Topps baseball cards that was like from 1986 and here it is 1993. You're like, I guess I'll try this thing, see how it goes. Anyway, you're shuffling through the cards and you've got this amazing, this rookie card or your favorite pitcher, Nolan Ryan or something like that comes out of here. So that excitement of opening these up. So does he still have unopened packs of cards in the game, or what do you do for that?
Well, I don't think it's officially like you don't open booster packs in the game, but you kind of represent booster packs. I think you like stack up a little stack of cards and, you know, so it's like you don't know what's in it. You're going to pick up a stack of cards. If I understand right, I haven't really listened to a game description on this for several years, so I may be kind of making it up, but I think it's just reproducing that experience. But no, you don't open packs. You can go back to this and reset it anytime and just play it.
Okay.
That sounds like a fun idea. And this is a world that I can't believe that I never got into because I love collecting things. And how did I never end up getting into these kind of collectibles?
Chris, you're lucky you met me like 2 years later than you did, because I would have had you play Magic the Gathering like obsessively if we just met 2 years earlier.
Yeah, then I'd have no family and no home and no money. And
there's a reason I gave it up.
All right. So like I said, this year I was trying to fill some gaps. I was trying to re-envision who I am as a gamer. And so I think this next one is going to be a bit of a shocker to Tim that I picked this game. And I'm even going to say it the way that you say it. Can you guess what it is?
No. It's an Uwe Rosenberg game?
It's Orleone.
Oh, nice. All right.
Which I technically have played. I think I played it one time, and this is like right at the beginning of when you started introducing me to hobby board gaming, and I was not at all sold at that point. I like big things that are flashy. This game is not big. It was not flashy. It was very fiddly, and I was just so turned off by it, and that has carried with me for a long time, but I've grown a lot as a gamer since then. And I've learned so many times about games that I didn't give a second chance to. And eventually, when I do give it a second chance, I actually find that I really enjoy it. And the thing that really convinced me on this one, other than the fact that, I mean, it's got some real bona fides. I mean, it's got, you know, it's number 31 on the all-time list on BGG. So it's got to have some quality to it. It's that I have really learned a deep love of bag building. And so as a bag building game, I think that piece of it may draw me in, may engage me, even if there's not a lot of other things that do. But I also think that my general appreciation now for different kinds of games, ones that maybe have a drier theme, also will pull me in. And oh, and I forgot to mention, Orleone is designed by Reiner Stockhausen and is published by Arclight Games. So there you go, Tim.
Well, I think Orleone is now published by Capstone Games in North America. Just FYI, it was taken over from some other publisher. Chris, I'm so excited that you are enthusiastic about playing this. I was just looking at my shelf the other day and saw Orleone there, and I thought, I'm going to bring this to our next BGHT Con, because honestly, I think you will all enjoy it. I think Adam's going to like it. Chris, I think this is a great fit for you right now. And I played it with Steve, but he probably doesn't remember. It's been like probably 5 years since he played it too. I think we'll have a great time playing early on. So interested, we'll get this one played this year, and we'll see how it sticks with you. If you like this one, we're definitely going back to Hyperborea.
All right, Tim, I was just going to mention Hyperborea. That's one that almost made my list, but not quite. That's one I definitely want to play as well. I've heard good things and been wanting to play that one for a while now. So nice little add-in there with Hyperborea. But my number five is a recent game, 2022. This is Turing Machine. This is a game you can pick up anywhere. And it's, let's see, it's designed by Fabian Gridel and Johan Levitt. Publisher listed here is Scorpion Masque. I don't know if that's who it's published by in North America. This is a game, it's a deduction game that sort of involves the principles of old school computer programming cards. You're trying to deduce these things and figure out the puzzle, and then that has this mechanical, physical device that you're sort of wedging through these cards to see if you got the correct answer. So just the physical design of this game is captivating, and I haven't really played any kind of deduction game like this. So I'm really looking forward to trying Turing Machine. I've heard a lot of good things. It looks relatively light. We'll see. I'm wanting to play this one. Have you guys heard of this one at all?
Yeah, I played it. It's on Board Game Arena, actually. And so Steve had invited me to some games on Board Game Arena. I think he played it in person first. It's pretty cool. It's a pretty solid game. I think you should play it. I think you'd like it. I don't think it's a good fit for me for like async play on Board Game Arena, because it's one of these games that when it's my turn, it's like 10 minutes for me to think through a decent decision. And I don't like playing async games like that. So I think I'd enjoy this one more in person, but I think it's a solid game. You should check it out. I was talking about Letter Jam a few weeks ago about almost a party style game that is very complex to teach. I think Turing Machine is going to be the same. Like I keep thinking about, like, if I was going to teach this game to somebody, I feel like they would have no idea what I was talking about until we got through two or three rounds of it. Because it's just like the way you have to apply the logic to the little puzzle that gets put in. And then, I didn't really get it my first game. And then it clicked with me. And then it was like, oh, okay, this is great. It's pretty cool. So I think you'll like it, Adam.
Okay.
And this is one that I've heard of and I'm fascinated by. Actually, believe it or not, this is one that I sort of had in my mind for this list, but I couldn't remember the name of it. So I was looking and I was confusing it with a couple of other games and finally said, well, I'm going to give up and I'm going to quit looking for it. I'll figure it out. But yeah, this is actually a really fascinating looking game. And it's also a pretty incredible story. The story of Alan Turing, who it's named after, the designer of the first computer, hacked the German codes, and then ended up getting discredited and persecuted for being gay. So it's a pretty incredible story, even if the game is pretty loosely tied to the actual life of Alan Turing.
Funny little story there is that my MIS degree for my bachelor's in college and my master's and my thesis on it was on Alan Turing's life. What was interesting at the time, though, is the book I read on him and the information I found on the internet at the time didn't mention anything about the persecution for his homosexuality.
Oh, wow.
Which obviously was a highlight of the Imitation Game, the movie that was made on his life as well. So things changed a lot in, 20 years from when I was going through college and what was public and what was, common knowledge and talked about and stuff. But yeah, fascinating character, fascinating individual, and a pretty interesting game that tries to take old punch card technology and apply it to a board game. All right. Well, my number four is a gap that should have been filled a long time ago. This is Tricarion Legends of Illusion, designed by Richard Amon, Victor Peter, and published by Mind Clash Games. I've enjoyed every Mind Clash game that I've played, but they're all a lot of work to get into. And yeah. I don't think Tricarion's going to be any different, but they all pay off for me. I think that they make wonderful games, wonderful productions, wonderfully thematic and interesting games. And I'm excited to try Tricarion. This is a game about being a magician and learning tricks and then putting on a stage production. And it sounds incredibly complex with a lot of different layers to what you have to do. I think in a way it's a worker placement game to some extent, but an incredibly complex worker placement game. But I know a couple of people that have this game and they're like, yeah, we'll teach it to you. So I'm waiting for that teach to happen because I don't want to learn this game on my own. And I'm hoping to get this one played this year. I think it might happen.
Tim, did you know I used to own the collector's edition of this Mind Clash game?
I did, and I wish you'd given it to me when you gave me your Anachrony collector's edition as well.
Did I offer it? Was it like on the table? And you just were like, I don't want that.
No, you had already sold it at that point, I think. But knowing how much I have dug experiencing an Anachrony, I think that it would have been fun to dig into Tricarion, that big collector's edition as well.
Well, and now you know how Adam feels about the game.
Well, this is one, like you said, I knew it was huge and overwhelming and had all these components and all this stuff. I heard it was a great game, but I am never going to play this game. It's a giant box of awesomeness that's just going to end up sitting here getting dusty like a couple of the other ones behind me. So I ended up selling it pretty quickly back when shipping prices were reasonable, and it went quick.
This is another one that almost made my list this year. It's almost made a couple of lists, but I think the reason that it didn't make it was for sort of the converse reasons of what Tim had to say about it. I have had some mixed emotions about Mind Clash games. I feel like they are a bit overly fiddly, and that does not necessarily make the games always bad, but I'm a little bit less enthusiastic about jumping into them because of the level of complexity. And so I am very excited to try it, though. This is definitely one that I would like to play as well. All right. Well, my number four is another one that is, I think, a real gap filler. And it may not be the most exciting choice, but it is Splendor, designed by Marc-André and published by Space Cowboys. This is one of those games that everybody knows. Everybody has played it. You can buy it at any store. Heck, you can buy this one at the local gift shop. You can buy it at Barnes & Noble. You can get it. Everybody knows Splendor. And it shocks me that I haven't actually played this game yet. And you guys have talked about it a bit, and so I get the concept. And from what I've heard from you guys, and I think others as well, is that this doesn't have the same level of elegance as, say, Azul, which is a supremely elegant game. But I think it appears to have some of that same sort of puzzliness to it. And I want to give that a shot, especially because this is another game that's available on BGA. And so it would be an easy one to get played. And it feels like a gap in my experience that I just need to fill, because how can it be that all these people who aren't even gamers know about Splendor and I still haven't played it yet? So I want to get this one in. Hopefully I'll get it done this year. Shouldn't be too hard.
Chris, if somebody has played a game, they're a gamer. So don't talk like that.
Yeah, fair enough.
Chris, this is one that Board Game Chatterbox got Sarah and I to play. She introduced it to us on Board Game Arena, and Sarah loved it so much that she picked up a copy. Oh. And we've played it a few times since then, and it's a delight. I think you'll enjoy it.
Yeah, this is a game that is just as streamlined as Azul, Chris, and I think you'll dig it. It's pretty, you know, it's pretty easy, pretty simple, but it's a fun little game. What's an interesting thing about it is that Splendor Duel came out last year, which is a two-player only version of it, and I picked that up and actually love it. It adds just a little bit of extra variety and changes to the game that it's a much more interesting experience than just base Splendor is. Mm. But in any case, if Splendor's on Board Game Arena, if you ever want a game, just let me know. I've played it probably 50 times at this point, so I can jump right into a game with you.
Up next for me, we'll go with a new one. I think it delivered a few days ago, but I wasn't home until yesterday, so I was sitting there. I opened the box. This is Fractal Beyond the Void. I know we weren't going to talk about too many new games, but this is one of them. I opened it up, and it is beautiful. Let me show you guys some of the pieces of bad podcasting, but I'm going to show you guys. Maybe you'll hear Tim and Chris ooh and ah over some of these components, but check it out. So we're going to start here with some of the artwork is just pretty phenomenal. These, yeah, right?
Ooh. That's
this guy, look at this mysterious fella with some gentleman and
that looks cool.
Sci-fi city behind him. Yeah, there we go.
Ah.
Here's the old Exodian faction. You got to have one of these guys with some troops and some plated gear and some large chest plates. Of course, you gotta look masculine.
Oh,
Adam, I'm gonna stop you right there for a second, because I remember that the artwork on the faction characters was really mm-hmm. cool when we yep. played this.
Yeah,
you know, back when it was on Kickstarter. Did they do anything with artwork on like the technology cards and stuff, or is that still just text?
Now Tim is asking the real journalistic questions. Let me grab a deck of cards here while you guys meander.
Yeah, this is, I've been seeing this getting delivered, and I knew Adam was going to be excited about this one. So it's, I have a feeling this is what we're going to be spending our next afternoon with at Board Game at the BGHT Con.
All right. I don't know if you can see that too well, but it looks pretty rad. The whole top half.
Those are big cards.
Yeah. Well, I'm holding it close to the camera.
Okay.
They're not that big.
Yeah. Are they the smaller size cards? I was expecting, are they like playing size cards? Or are they like?
They're playing cards. They're playing standard size cards.
Okay. So they're bigger than I expected. Yeah. I thought they were going to be little tiny small cards.
And here's another one that's, I don't know if you can see, the artwork is great. Yeah. Whole top half is beautiful nice. Artwork. And the bottom half nice. Has three or four lines of text there.
Not bad with the art too.
Yeah. Cool. Do you think, Adam, let me ask you a question. Cause this is, I think, important for us to get this played together. Is it going to be a good game with a single game, or do you feel like you have to dive into a campaign to have a fun experience with this?
I hope the answer is it can be done, you know, with a single game, and there's going to be a mix and match of the different factions, asymmetrical and stuff. There's also the automa. There's, I think, up to three or four automa that you can play as if you want to play it solo, or you can play, you know, any combination of players and automa. So I don't know. That's, I guess that's to be determined, but obviously I hope it's good. Single session just as good as the campaign is.
Well, I think what we should do is on our next BGHTCon, you bring it, we bust through a single game of it, and if everyone's feeling it, then we jump into a campaign and we turn it into our TI4 moment, like Steve wanted to do after we played My Father's Work last time, and he was ready to immediately play another 4-hour game. All right, cool. Well, my number three this year is an interesting one, because I can't figure out why this one has me so hooked. But from the moment that I saw it and heard about it, I wanted to play it. I even talked about featuring in our show at one point. We never did. This is Creature Comforts. This is designed by Roberta Taylor and published by Kids Table Board Games. This is a little kind of light midweight Euro game based about forest animals hibernating for the winter and needing to have their places all hooked up in a nice way to make them relax. So the game is all about collecting the things that are going to give you creature comforts, whether it's board games, whether it's a nice sofa, whether it's, you know, like some good food that you're going to relax away with for the winter. I don't know. Something about this game just has me so charmed. The artwork on it seems like a kind of a relaxed light Euro game, but I want to try this one. It's just stuck in my head. Every time I hear about it, I'm like, man, I wish I'd had a chance to play that. So this is one I hope to get played this year. One of the interesting things that you might notice about our list here for me is that I really will not buy any games blindly anymore. I've got too many great games that I love already. So if I just hear about a game, I won't pick it up. I will wait till I get a chance to play it. And if it really captures me, then I'll buy it if I think I'm going to get it played a lot. And then typically something that I used to love will leave my collection. With Creature Comforts, I don't know anybody that cares about this, that cares about the theme or, you know, wants to play it with me. I might just pick this one up, give it a try, see if it hits with some of my midweight game playing friends. We'll see if it sticks around, but I am hoping to give this one a try this year.
It looks really cute. I'll say that.
Yeah, I'd try this one, Tim.
All right. Well, my number three is one of the heavier games on my list this year. It is Kanban EV, designed by Vital Lacerda and published by Eagle Griffin Games. You had so many times that you've mentioned Vital Lacerda recently that it occurred to me, I don't think I've ever actually played one of his games. And so that felt like a real oversight to me and another gap that needs to get filled. So I went looking at the various games he has, and this one is super high. It's number 51 on BGG's top games list, and it just looks interesting to me. Maybe I got fooled by Motor City and charmed by that one and the idea of a car building game, because I don't think it's the same game at all. I mean, this is a heavy one versus a medium weight roll and write. But the theme actually struck me as pretty interesting, which is ironic considering how often we bust on smartphoning, for example. But I actually like this one where you end up doing your worker placement, putting your workers in different departments of EV factory, an electric vehicle factory, and then you pick which action you want to take within that department. And just one of these cute little funny things that I liked about it was that the time marker is the boss walking down the hallway. When she gets to her office, then everybody has to report back. And this is how I accomplished what I needed to accomplish in my department, in this department, in that department, and met my production goals and various things. So it looks like a very heavy, very complex worker placement game. But I like that little bit of cleverness in there. I'm interested to try a Lacerda game. And I find the car making theme pretty interesting.
Fun choice, Chris. The Lacerda game I've tried and used to own was On Mars. Another game, I think it's in the top 50, probably up there near Kanban EV. But I've heard this one mentioned as well as being some people's favorite Lacerda game. A lot of people say these Lacerda games are super complex, and they are. But a lot of times the action that you're doing, the thing that you start off your turn with, is relatively simple. Put a thing here and do that. But it's the echoing effects of doing that thing and how it all ties together with the rest of your game and what this does to this other thing, does this other thing, and combo, combo, combo. Mm-hmm. I'd like to try this one and see how it goes. It looks like a beautiful production. It's another Vitalis Cerdan Ian O'Toole artwork combo, mm-hmm. I believe.
It is. Yep.
Yeah, it's so interesting you mentioned this, Chris, because just today, one of our listeners called us out on Blue Sky and said, hey, I just played my first Vitalis Cerdan game. It was Kanban EV. What would you recommend we take up next? And I had to say, I haven't played very many Lacerdas. And I'm intrigued for sure. Like, I played On Mars with Adam, and it was a very interesting game. We played two games together. It was one of the first games we ever played together, Adam. In fact, I remember the day that I went to Adam's house. We just met. I went to Adam's house. We played On Mars. I'm driving back home, and I'm getting phone calls with people talking about this pandemic that's going around. What do you think about it? And within a few days, we never saw each other again for 3 years because of this thing. So
lockdown.
Yeah. So it was an interesting time to meet somebody new, and amazing that we're still talking today at this point. You know, On Mars to me was an interesting game, but it did feel like what you got out of the game for the amount of time you spent and the weight of it, it just didn't feel like it paid off for me. And I don't know that that's going to be true of other Lacerda games. I really want to try Lisboa. I really want to try Kanban EV. Anyway, so a listener shouted this out to us today, and I was like, I wish I could give you some advice, but I haven't tried it. And he absolutely loved it. So I would recommend we do a feature review on one of Lacerda's games, but do we have 6 hours to go through a gameplay session and a podcast recording in one night? We'd have to really schedule that, figure that one out if we're going to make it happen. Anyway, I'd love to try this one with you, Chris, for sure.
Multiple session.
Yeah, that's it. We'll do it a two session, do a half a gameplay in one night, half a gameplay another night, record an episode, something like that.
Like hegemony,
that's right. We've done it before over three sessions. We can do a Lacerda game in two.
Interesting side note on this one, the BGG page for Kanban EV says that it goes up to 180 minutes standard playing time, and it was a 4.31 complexity. On Mars, which you guys have both played, I have not, 90 to 150 minutes and a 4.67 complexity rating.
Oh, okay, so a little less complexity then,
from little perspective. Yeah.
Before I do my number three, I want to talk about the designers of Fractal Beyond the Void. I didn't mention them. It's Jan Hilaire, Romain Lisiuk, and Bernardo Ripa. With the beautiful artwork done by Tom Lopez and the publishers Boar Game Studio. Okay, on to my number three. We'll do Clockwork Wars with this one. And I'm not sure if I mentioned this one 2 years ago or 3 years ago, or if I've mentioned it ever at all.
No. Nope.
But this is a game from 2015 designed by Hassan Lopez and published by Eagle Griffin Games. A handful of artists with this one. This is allegedly one of the coolest dudes on a map games. It doesn't get talked about much. I don't know why, but everything I've heard about this game is overwhelmingly positive. And when I first got into the hobby, I remember looking at this one and be like, oh man, maybe this is a game I should get. And I almost pulled the trigger a few times. I never did. Who am I going to play it with? I don't have the group for it, but this is a game that interests me tons and tons and tons. And I've still, every once in a while, pops up and I hear fantastic things about it. That's about all I know about it. Clockwork Wars, I need to read up some more. I remember there's some interesting mechanisms in there as far as combat and how it all works. And I think there's some kind of neat auction and stuff in there and technologies, just like every other game that has troops on a map. But for some reason, this one stood out. Would love to get this one played. Clockwork Wars.
I love it.
There's Adam pulling out the quirky games that nobody's heard of again. I've literally never heard of this game. And it's interesting, 2015, which was just right before I got in the hobby, so I was very familiar with a lot of the popular games at the time. It's got a steampunk theme to it, which is right up Chris's alley. Mm-hmm. Now, the production looks just a little bit outdated for 2015 to me, so that might be why it didn't like really hit for people. But hey, I'm totally in on any kind of troops on a map unique themed game at this point. I'd give this one a try for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I see what Tim is saying about the production, but man, I'm pretty fascinated by it. I'd do it.
All right, cool. Well, my number two is a newer game. This is one of the newer ones on my list. This is Oathsworn Into the Deep Wood. I believe this was just like the first Kickstarter edition of this came out earlier this year and was sent to backers. This was designed by Jamie Jolly and published by Shadowborn Games. And I haven't heard a lot about it, but what I've heard or what I've seen about it just has me intrigued. And, you know, this type of like big minis, you know, solo or cooperative campaign style game is typically not my thing, but I've been having a lot of fun with Frosthaven, and I feel like this could be the follow on to Frosthaven for me. This is like a, I think they call it a boss battler, but the idea that you go the first half of a gameplay session is that you're going through this adventure, kind of doing choose your own adventure type of story driven stuff that helps you collect resources and stuff. And then you walk into this battle with the big monster boss. And the combat just seems interesting, the way that you're kind of navigating around the big monster that you're fighting with and how you can interact with them. And everything I've heard has been positive, and it has me intrigued. So I want to give this one a try. I don't know if it's going to happen. This is probably the least likely one that will actually get played for me this year, because I'm not going to buy it. But if somebody I know has it, I'm hoping to get in on a session of it and try Oathsworn Into the Deepwood.
Yeah, it's one I've heard a lot of good things about. Again, another one I'd love to try. I had the group for it. It looks like a fantastic game, but I don't think I'll probably ever play it.
The guy I've been playing Frosthaven with, he's just like, I recently introduced him to the hobby, and he is just like all in. So he's just constantly, every Kickstarter is like, Tim, should I back this? I'm like, no, don't back it. Tim, should I back this one? No, don't back it. But at one point he's like, what about this Oathsworn? This looks pretty good. I was like, yeah, pick that one up. And instead he backed the new Gloomhaven second edition, which is cool. But I was kind of hoping to play Oathsworn, but that's okay. You know, playing the original Gloomhaven, the second edition, that I'm in on that as well. But do hope to get this one.
I'm so fascinated by your evolution here, Tim.
Right?
I know, right?
What has happened? Where's the Tim that we know and love?
Seriously.
What have you done with him, alien fiend?
Why do you have all the heavy Euros on your list, Chris? And I got all the big minis games. What's going on here?
Well, for my number two, I'm going to try to catch up with Adam in the weird games competition here. I had to have something with a little bit of area-ish control and something with a little bit of a weird theme to it. So I also managed to find one that has not one, but two hyphened subtitles. It's Cosmic Frog.
Yes.
World Eaters from Dimension Zero, a game of strategic gluttony. Designed by Jenna Felly and published by Devious Weasel Games. I don't know what these people were smoking when they came up with this game, but the concept of it is that each player is a 2 mile tall world eating frog, interdimensional. The idea is that you're traveling around fighting to be able to eat the most planets. And then when you're full, vomiting it out into the void, into a vault where it can be stored for safekeeping. I'm not sure exactly why you're storing your vomit, but you are. And just as a little fun side note about it, they actually have a expansion called the Find Muck expansion. So
great name.
Clearly some weirdness going on here. But area control, a very bizarre theme, some really, really interesting art. And one thing that kind of shocked me a little bit, because it's such an odd idea, I watched a video where Jamie Stegmaier was talking about this, and he actually loved this little quirky thing about the game. Turn order is determined by a deck of cards, and you shuffle the deck, and then whoever's card gets drawn, it's their turn, and you have multiple cards in the deck, so you could theoretically take two or three turns in a row. And you don't know when your turn is coming up, but you do know that if you don't take a bunch of turns at the beginning of the round, then at the end of the round, you're going to get a bunch of turns. And so it just sounds like a really, well, I guess I'll say that it sounds like it could either be very interesting or be a complete weirdo flop. But Jamie Stegmaier liked it, so, you know, I put some trust in his judgment. So I'm really interested to try this game.
Chris is a great pick. Another one I've had my eye on for a long time. I don't know why we haven't played. It seems like right up our weird alley, Chris. We should get this one going. It looks fantastic. I don't know if you've seen the minis for this one. There are these great looking frogs and all these different poses. Production looks absolutely fantastic. We should try this game.
Yeah.
I have a couple questions.
Yes.
First of all, I have heard about this game before. I know some people love it. I think it's going to be too weird and quirky to be enjoyable to me. I think it's not about quirkiness. It's about, I have a feeling that the rules are kind of a mess, that it's not streamlined. Could be wrong about that. I'm willing to try it for sure. My first question is, you said these are 2 mile tall frogs, but they're eating worlds. How tiny are these planets that they can be consumed by a 2 mile tall frog. That's number one.
Tim, let's nickel and dime
this one, Tim. Actually, they eat worlds little bits at a time. So I think I misspoke. Okay. They eat land. So okay. I extrapolated that out to worlds because it seems more poetic or operatic or whatever.
My second comment I'll just mention, Chris, is that Jamie Stegmaier does a series of videos called Mechanism I Liked in This Game, and he never says anything negative. So just because he liked a mechanism doesn't mean he liked the game. I don't know. Maybe he did. I have no idea. But also, I would love to try this. I think it'd be quirky. I think it'd be fun to talk about. We should feature this on our... I think this is a great feature review, to be honest. I think this is one we should definitely hit up, and we're going to either have some really diverse opinions on it, or we're all going to be pleasantly surprised or pleasantly grossed out by this weird little game.
Yeah, like I really want to play with you now, Debbie Downer.
I know. Geez, Tim. There's a picture here on Board Game Geek of these couple women playing this game, and they don't look happy at all. One of them is staring off in the distance. One of them is looking down like, what did I get myself into? It's fantastic. They're just like, what is going on? All right. My next game, oh gosh, I only have two choices left, right? And I have three games, so one of these guys can have to get an honorable mention. My number two choice is a game called Shogun. This is from way back in 2006. Another kind of area control game designed by Dirk Hinn with art by Michael Menzel. And this is a game, it's another area control game. You're battling for control of feudal Japan from the period of mid-1400s to the mid-1500s. You're the role of a daimyo, blah, blah, blah. So that sounds all kind of generic and whatever. But each player has the same possible 10 actions to kind of build up your little kingdom there. And you're going to decide which land you're going to use that action in. And you're going to all kind of fight each other out in this area control battle. And you get these cubes. And you throw them in some little magical tower and you drop them down. And then the cubes that come out show who the winner is right away. So that's how combat's done. I think that's pretty neat, pretty clever little game. I've heard a lot of good things about this one. I don't know much about it other than that it's allegedly good. That's Shogun from way back in 2006. Another game I'd love to try.
Well, this is a perfect candidate for us to review because it's on Board Game Arena. And we could get in and play this one. I actually am really interested in this, too. It's like an older school war slash area control game that
I think
is going to be right up our alley. I think we should give it a shot.
Cool.
It looks like El Grande.
Yeah.
Yes, I was going to say, I think it's going to be very similar. But we all had a blast playing El Grande, and I think we could have a blast playing Shogun as well. All right, well, we're down to our number ones for next year. The number one game I want to play this coming year is Apiary. This is designed by Connie Vogelman and published by Snowmeyer Games. This is probably a really interesting pick because this game was just released recently. We hadn't talked much about it. But the more I've been hearing about it, the more I was at BGGCon and I sat and watched for a table to open up to play this game. And I just never was in the room at the right time. But I watched a lot of people playing it. I sat and just watched gameplay of it. And it looks super fun, super interesting. I have to admit, when it got announced, I was like, Space Bees seems cool. This is a game set on the idea that humans have died away and some other animal species kind of evolved to take their place. And it ended up being bees. So a lot of the actions you're doing are what bees would be doing, building hives and, you know, the way they're interacting with other bees and things like that. But you're doing it in a sci-fi setting. So it's got a weird, quirky art style and things like that. And that was cool, but it's a worker placement game. And we mentioned this last week. We talked about this, about how worker placement has just been, it's been used heavily. And so some games still really hit and some don't. And I think this one's really going to hit. I'm really excited about how this game is going to play out. I wasn't super excited when I first heard about it, but the more I've seen it, the more I've heard about it. I want to get this game played so badly. I think this is going to be a perfect game for me. It sounds like huge variability, tons of different starting player powers you start with, tons of ways that you can develop your engine and kind of combo things together. And everything just seems like the right midweight Euro, kind of thematic Euro style experience that I'm looking for in a game. So can't wait to play Apiary by Connie Vogelman.
Nice. I wanted this game on my list. but you got it first.
Nice. That's a great thing about being more prepared than you guys. I can always put my list up first.
And I should have sent my list first.
Another one I want to try out as well, Tim, the great pick.
Yeah, if we can find a way to play this one remote, you know, like we will probably feature this one if we can find a way to play it digitally, or hopefully we'll get a chance to play it our next BGHT kind of one of us picks it up.
All right. My number one game is, I don't know. I'm not sure what my number one game is. Tim, you're going to tell me. So here is my question to you. I have been playing a bunch of Castles of Burgundy recently after that, the ill-fated experience that, you know, Adam just did not get into it. I was very sad about that. So I haven't been playing it so much with you guys, but I've been playing a bunch of it and I've been having a great time playing Castles of Burgundy. I know it's one of your favorite games of all time. Yeah. I know that you're a big Stefan Feld fan, but this happens to be your favorite Stefan Feld game. So I want to play another Feld game, but I know he's got a pretty big back catalog. So tell me, what should I play next? That's going to be my number one game this year.
Oh, you put me on the spot, Chris, but I love this because I think about this a lot. Now, I've only played, Stefan Feld, I think, has published like 35 or 40 games at this point. So huge catalog. I'm way behind. I've played about 10 of his games, and I have a couple ideas on what I think are going to be great fits for you. Number one, Bonfire. Mm. It's got a kind of a sci-fi slash fantasy theme. It's got some really cool engine building, some little mini goals you're going towards. I think this is a great one. By the way, it's on Yukata. If you want to try that, someone just invited me to a game yesterday in Yukata with this, and I've been reintroduced to it. But that one might be a good fit. The other one that I think is actually a very good streamlined game that doesn't get enough attention, and that's Merlin. This is based on the Knights of the Round Table thematically, but there's no theme to this at all. This is an interesting rondel game where it's a dice drafting game. Let me say that. And when you draft a dice, you move your pawn a certain number of spaces around this rondel. So it sounds like a roll and move, but it's not really, because you get to draft the dice, but wherever your pawn lands, that's the action you get to take. And then there's an area control element in each of these different regions of the board. You're trying to have majority control of that region based on the actions you take there. And there's all kinds of other things that trigger the expansion. I forget what it's called, but there's an expansion that adds basically an alternating dice that goes the other way around this rondel, so you can trigger multiple actions. I played it one time and it almost made a list that we're going to be doing next week, which are the top five games that we only played once in 2023, because it's a really wonderful game. But I think this could be a great fit, Chris. It's pretty streamlined, like Castles of Burgundy, a little bit abstract, but it has an interesting enough, you know, non just like pre-industrial Europe theme to it. And really fun gameplay. So if I had to guess, I would say Merlin's probably a great first pick for you. And then Bonfire, another good one, I think.
All right. Merlin it is. So Adam, I don't think, you're not a huge Stefan Feld fan, are you?
No, nothing. The more I play games.
Was that even a real question? Like, wouldn't we just say,
well, here's why.
Adam, do you hate everything Stefan Feld's ever made?
was that a statement in the form of a question?
Oh, yeah, right. Here's why. The theme is not there. The more I play games, the more I want an integrated theme, something that that applies the rule set to some sort of situation that makes sense. So that's that's a big turnoff there. His mechanisms are sound. Obviously, a lot of people love his games. But the more and more I play games, I want a nice blend of mechanism and theme.
I hear you. But I am willing to give this one a try because I have been pleasantly surprised by Castles of Burgundy. And hopefully I'll be equally pleasantly surprised by Merlin.
Yeah, I think you will, Chris. I think you'll dig it.
Thanks, dude.
Okay, my number one is a game by Cole Whirly Gig Games. This is John Company's second edition.
What?
Second giant, long, complex game that I'm going to bring to our next con, and I'm going to force it on our group. We're probably going to hate it. No one's going to like this game, but it's such, maybe we will like it. It's such a unique experience. We don't play anything like this. I've never played anything like this. I want to try it. I want to expose us to something new, give us a new experience, and we'll see how it goes. You guys might throw this back in my face and say, get out of here, Adam, but we have to try this thing. You guys will at least admire the components and the beauty of this game. Whether or not we actually enjoy the process of playing this thing is a question that is very nebulous. Well, no, it's not. We're not going to enjoy it. I don't think we'll enjoy it, but I'm going to make us do it anyway. That's John Company. Second, go ahead, Chris. Go ahead, you guys. Adam, start ripping on me.
You're a great friend, and I'll play whatever you want to play, but you haven't really convinced me that you even want to play this game.
Well, Chris, you introduced us to Lords of Ragnarok, which
I wanted to play that game.
I don't think anything can come in below that. So you've inspired me to be more bold with my game choices. I want to put this one in front of us and see how it goes with our new format.
That's
we try whatever we want.
I thought you were going to call out Chris for introducing you to how much he loved Oath, which another reason. Okay, so another same question I had for Fractal. Like, can we play this one session and get an experience out of it? Or does it require some kind of campaign?
No, you can do one session. No, there's no campaign here. There's different, you know, ways to play the game as far as the company. And there's a couple different scenarios. You can have a sort of build up, and then the company opens and then goes on from there. You can start in different years of the progression of the company. So if you don't know the game, it's about the East India Trading Company and how horrible it takes a satirical look at this East India Trading Company and all the evils it kind of did just so you could be a cozy, wealthy Englishman and go on to your happy retirement at the expense of abusing and exploiting a whole other country. It's a historical look at a very serious topic. That's part of the appeal to me is the education you can get playing a game like this, designed by Cole Worley, who has a huge fascination and has done tons of study in this area. So that's another reason and part of the appeal to me for John Company Second Edition. So yeah, if one person knows the game well, Tim, going back to your original question, they can kind of be the DM, the manager for this game, and flow everybody through it. It's a learn as you play, which allegedly works really, really well, as long as one person can guide everybody else through it. Now, whether we're going to understand the nuances of how it all goes down, that's a new question. But if you guys are willing to do this, I plan on learning this thing as best as I can and to be able to express some of those nuances to you. And hey, this is why you want to be governor of this region. This is why you want to be the author here. This is why you want to be the CEO or whatever it's called at this point in time. So there are tons of nuances. I want to try to get to the point where I can explain those to everybody at the table and guide us through it. And hopefully it's a fun experience.
All right. I'm all in, Adam. Let's do it. You got to learn it well, though. And then I'll be on it. We've got a few listeners that have been telling us for the last year and a half that we've got to get this played. So I'm sure they'll be excited to hear we're going to get this one done this year. Yeah. Maybe. Not according to Adam's record from last year, but maybe we'll
get it done this right. year.
Well, I'm down too. So maybe the three of us, you know, if we all add our superpowers to it, we can get this one done.
All right, cool. Well, that'll wrap up this year's list of the top games we want to get played next year. We'll take another look back next year if we're still here with you, and we'll tell you how things went. And otherwise, until next week, take care, everybody. Next week, we're going to be doing the topic, same thing we did last year, which is top five games we only played once in this last year. So we had a really fun time recording that last year. So we're going to do the same thing next week. Check it out. That episode's going to be releasing on Christmas Day.
Whoa.
So no one's going to listen to it.
That's right.
Merry Christmas.
All right. But in any case, take care, everybody. I'll see you next week.
Good night, all. Bye-bye.
I've enjoyed every Mind Clash game I've published. Or
I didn't know you published Mind Clash games, Tim. That's amazing. great work you're doing out of your house.
Sorry, guys. Tonight I'm having a rough night.